You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Paul Barkish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
It goes deep. Hub does too.
Analyzing the Bears and the NFL.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Paul Barkish with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
He's feeling better, and he's back. The top of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. You want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and earn a $5,000 signing bonus? Visit Sprint on Rand Road in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. Saturday for your chance to win. Hub is here. He is on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, and we have a meaningful football game to discuss between the Bears and the Packers. The Bears, I don't know if you were listening earlier, but Rich Campbell said all the Bears like, oh, yeah, well, the pressure's off, and that's why we're playing so well. And it's kind of an indictment of a team that apparently couldn't handle the pressure when it all really mattered. But how much do you think this game does matter?
Well, it matters a lot. I mean, number one, the path to the playoffs is difficult, but it's not that weird. You need the Rams to lose two out of three, and they're going to play the Cowboys and the Seahawks and the Cardinals. And you need the Vikings to lose to the Packers. And if the Bears beat them and win out, obviously they're in. You know, so it's really a huge game in that respect. Beyond that, I think even if they don't make the playoffs, this is a team that has had an up-and-down season, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what to do for next year. How close are they really? They've played much better the last few weeks. A lot of people are questioning how important that is based on the competition they've played. You know, the Cowboys, certainly are not in the category of the Lions or the Giants. I mean, yes, they came in a bad place, but that's still, you know, a pretty good football team that they beat up. They didn't just beat them. And so I think there's two things that are critical. A, you want to go in and beat the Packers. And B, you have to do it with the offense continuing to show signs of improvement. So I think those two things are very important for this organization.
Hub, get back to the Bears in just a second, but there's some breaking news today. This from baseball's Hall of Fame. Ken Hawk Harrelson, who became a Chicago icon while calling White Sox games for 34 of his 43 years behind the mic, has been selected as the 2020 recipient of the Ford C. Frick Award, presented annually for excellence in broadcasting by the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. He'll be recognized during the Hall of Fame Awards presentation Saturday, July 25th, as part of the Hall of Fame weekend in 2020. He's the 44th winner of the Frick Award. He earned the highest point total in a vote conducted by the Hall of Fame's 15-member Frick Award Committee. Congratulations to
wow.
Hawk Harrelson.
Wow. I did not see that coming.
Congratulations to Hawk Harrelson. Eight finalists this year. Hawk Harrelson has a huge number of the vote, and he is headed to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, how about that?
You with us, Hub? You okay? I'm hearing beeping and dinging back there. You all right?
Yeah, we're having a little trouble with the phone here, but I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Okay, good. Well, we're certainly going to be covering the Hawk Harrelson Hall of Fame story as we're talking football now with Hub Arkish. I'm a little blown away by that.
That's quite something.
I had heard that there were other possibilities locally, but that was not one that I thought was going to happen. Man, wow. All right, Hub, the Mitchell Trubisky improved play, it does what in a larger picture? What are the storylines we're looking at that may carry over into big decisions that they have?
Well, most importantly, it's got to continue for the next 3 weeks. There can't be any backsliding or you're really, you know, where you were at midseason, which is there's never been any question as to whether Mitch is back next year or not. He's going to be back and competing for the job. The question is, what kind of competition do you bring in? And what do you do about the fifth-year option on that contract? And, you know, I have to be honest, I haven't really studied the cap ramifications of that fifth year. I don't know that it's really a critical decision. If you exercise it and he's back, it's guaranteed only for injury. Should he get hurt with a serious injury, you know, next year, late in the season, that would be kind of disastrous because then you'd owe him
roughly $24 million in 2021, even if he wasn't your quarterback. But beyond that, you don't plan for that kind of thing. The flip side is if you don't exercise it and he comes back and has a really big year next year, you still can control him for another couple of years. You can still extend a contract. This probably is still going to be the place where he wants to play. So I just don't think the decision to exercise or not is all that critical until we get a better handle on the cap ramifications. The bigger issue is that if he does continue to play really well for the next 3 weeks, then I think you're probably looking for a veteran quarterback who you can count on more than Chase Daniels to come in and be your backup next year. Probably about the same age as Chase, but I think we've seen now that if you had to go with Chase Daniels for any prolonged period of time, with a team that is likely to still have its window open to contend next year, you would have a problem. If Mitch doesn't impress the next few weeks, then you're more likely to look at a Marcus Mariota who's going to be on the market. We still don't know if Jameis Winston will be or not. We know Teddy Bridgewater will be, although that would be too expensive. And there'll be a few other names as well. I think regardless of any of that, they have to draft a young developmental quarterback who they believe can be a very good player in the National Football League. You're not going to do it. You're not going to trade up into the first round. You're probably not even going to use one of those second round. If you could use one of those second round picks, you might, if you really like the guy, if somehow Tua or somebody like that fell into the second round, although I don't think that'll happen. But regardless of what Mitch does, they've got to draft another young quarterback that they can develop so they don't get caught in this situation again, where you're looking at, you've got Mitch who isn't performing up to standard, and all you've got as an option is Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray.
Mitch, at this point in the week, at this point of the week, do we have any sense of what to expect from Akeem Hicks against Green Bay?
No, not really. I mean, we talked to him yesterday, and he looks good. He sounds good. I have worried all along. Some people have posited that because it was an upper body injury, that's better, that he hasn't lost any of that power in his legs. He's been able to continue to work out, probably do cardio, all of those things. That's true. The flip side of it that has bothered me a little bit, though, is that I can't imagine he's done a whole lot of lifting in the last 7-8 weeks. And right. So is the upper body strength still dominant the way that it's been in the past? Rarely does a guy come back from being off 6 weeks with an injury that serious and be 100%. I think the flip side of that, though, is that 90% of Akeem Hicks is still a big addition to this defense. So, I don't expect to see him blowing up double teams and dominating the way he did prior to the injury, but I do think he's a guy who can go out and make some plays and certainly will command enough attention to hopefully open some other things up for some of the other players on the defense.
I'm really concerned about Aaron Rodgers against these linebackers because they Kevin Pierre-Louis played well. Nick Kwiatkowski's playing really well. But this is a quarterback who, just given a little bit of time, especially what we've seen him do with slants and skinny posts in the middle of the field, is going to get their hips turned in coverage. And I'm reading it as a significant vulnerability for this Bears defense. Do you concur?
I don't know about significant. Again, we visited with some of the assistant coaches yesterday and talked to Mark DeLeon, the inside linebackers coach. And, obviously he's not going to say anything negative, but I was surprised how strong and positive he was talking about Nick Kwiatkowski. And his argument is, you turn on the tape, you're going to see him playing very well in coverage. And that's been, reported to be a liability of his. We know he's not the athlete that a Danny Trevathan or Roquan Smith is. But he certainly has played very well, and I don't think he's as bad in coverage as we thought he would. And when you look at a Kevin Pierre-Louis, he's the same player as Roquan Smith. He's just not quite as talented. But, he's got that kind of quick twitch and athleticism and speed, so they will use him that way. I think maybe even more importantly, right now you've got Eddie Jackson and Clinton Dix both playing the best football of the season the last 3 or 4 weeks that they've played. And so obviously, it's a concern against Aaron Rodgers. Nobody can pretend that there's no drop-off from Trevathan and Smith to Kwiatkowski and Kevin Pierre-Louis, but I don't know that the drop-off is going to be that significant that it can't be balanced out by the return of Akeem Hicks. So we'll watch. We'll see. It's interesting, guys. You study the Packers' offense. They haven't been that good. They're not in the top 20 in any significant category except for points scored. They're 13th in points scored. And so, yes, Aaron Rodgers scares the hell out of me, but there are still flaws in this Packers defense. offense, I should say, and the Bears' defense. You know, they haven't had the splash plays. They haven't had the takeaways. But everywhere else, they're still playing well. They're fourth in the NFL in points allowed. And so I think it's wise to be scared by Aaron Rodgers. But I don't think it's an exclusive, the kind of thing that you have to say they can't win the game because of.
Hub, what's wrong with Green Bay's offense? Is it the same stuff that we saw in week one that just couldn't quite get on track? Or is it now sort of some different symptoms that are affecting that that team?
Well, there's some of what we saw in week one, but they have found a decent running game. They had a great running game. I think I'm trying to remember now, somewhere around 17th or 20th or something like that. Aaron Jones has had a really good year. He gets in the end zone. He's got 15 touchdowns, 12 rushing and 3 receiving, 745 yards. He's averaging a yard less per carry than he did last year. He's gotten nicked up on occasion, and Jamal Williams has been good in flashes, has also been banged up. He's battling a knee. I think the bigger problem with the running game is that the interior of that offensive line is just not that good. They're very good at tackle. But Brian Balaga, again, is hurt. He's going to play, but his knee is bothering him. And then the biggest issue with the Packers' offense is that Devontae Adams was down for 3, 4, 5 weeks. He looks close to 100% now at that turf toe, but they have not established a second or third receiver. You've got these guys, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, he's a big play threat down the field, but that's about it. Alan Lazard, Geronimo Allison, none of them have more than 20-some catches. And so, once you get past Devontae Adams and they're throwing the ball to Aaron Jones, they just don't threaten you with the receivers the way that they have in the past. And I think that's the biggest problem for Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. He's playing as well as ever. His passer rating is about 102, 2 interceptions all year long. But he doesn't have the weapons around him that have made him so scary in games like this.
Hub, I got to give you credit. Maybe we call this the Arkish effect, because it was right after the last time the Bears played the Packers that you sort of threw your hands up and said, what are you doing completely abandoning the run? You can't live like this. And they've learned the lesson. It does seem that as things have somewhat stabilized after they pretty much flushed their season away, that there has been the balance that you have craved. And I think this is going to be a test, because the Packers' run defense is one against which you should be striving for this kind of balance and picking your spots and taking the pressure off. So maybe we'll learn how Matt Nagy is evolving, right?
Yeah, I'd love to take credit for it, but I think every intelligent football analyst who's ever lived knows that you can't win in the NFL without running the football. And I think Matt Nagy certainly knew it all along, but I think he's grown as a coach and a play caller in recent weeks in not giving in to the temptation to go to his bag of tricks, to go to his passing game, to try and be explosive. I think he's gotten a much better feel for the weapons that he has to deal with. And I think it's interesting, and it's not just last week against Dallas. It's been happening the last 3 or 4 weeks. J.P. Holtz and now Jesper Horsted have really started to solidify the tight end position. I mean, these aren't guys who are probably ever going to go to a Pro Bowl, but Holtz is doing a nice job as the Y, even though he's kind of a tweener. But he's playing that position. And Horsted is more of a threat when he's out there with him than Trey Burton was hurt. They've also used Cornelius Lucas really effectively in 12 and 22 personnel as that second tight end, and that's helped as well. And then the last piece of it is that I still believe that James Daniels eventually will be a better center than he is a guard. I believe Cody Whitehead can play either, maybe as a better guard, but Rashad Coward has really improved over the last couple of weeks. I don't know how good he's going to be. I don't know if he's the answer at the position. But you got a guy who is starting to make a difference inside there. And then when Bobby Massey went down, they didn't lose much with Cornelius Lucas. So I think Matt Nagy has always wanted to run the football. I just think it took him a long time to get comfortable with it. And you see the effect. I think the effect is both of the running game and of now having a couple tight ends who, if you've got to throw them the ball every once in a while, defenses have to account for them.
I want to dig back into that offensive line swap that the Bears made, moving Cody Whitehair to center. You mentioned Rashad Coward playing a lot better. They've said that having Whitehair, a more experienced player there in the middle between Daniels and Rashad Coward, is a big reason they made the switch. Do you see that as affecting the play as much? And how much has Cody kind of reinforced whatever Mitch is seeing in the defense? It's kind of been tough to determine Mitch's reads on defenses since he's seen a little bit more man over the last couple of weeks than he had in when the struggles were really happening?
You know, Connor, it's a great question, and honestly, I'm not qualified to have an opinion, not being in the meeting rooms with these guys. And you know, I can look at the tape, and they're certainly performing better, but how much of that is because of the improved communication, it's hard for me to know. But I do know, talking to Harry Houston yesterday, and of course, Matt, he said from the beginning this was the reason for the switch, he said the communication has been much better, and he said it has been helpful to both Coward and Daniels, that you know, they're just more comfortable having that veteran presence between the two youngsters. Now, I've also talked to some other folks around the league who've confirmed what we've gone wrong. It's not unusual for a guy to be making the line calls. And so they didn't have to move Cody inside just for him to take over the communication aspect of it. But certainly it's easier for him to communicate with both Daniels and Cowards on either side of him than it would be for him to communicate with Coward if they were split by Daniels. And so I think we have to accept that it has made a difference because, you know, when all the coaches are telling you the same thing and you can see the improved play on the tape, we do have to assume that they're communicating better and that is helping the youngsters.
Hub, thank you. We look forward to talking Friday. We will be at the Brat Stop with you taking calls.
All righty, guys. Good to be with you.
That is Hub Arkish, one of our fine Bears experts. We should mention that this week, the Sportsbook at Ameristar pregame show and the postgame are live from Chicago Q Restaurant, 1160 North Dearborn in Chicago. Hub and Manley and Olin Krutz pregame. Hub Manley and Big Cat Williams on the postgame.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.